Tuesday, March 27, 2007, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5542 and Senate Bill 5543, the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Mr. Siebert, do you have anything?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll just note that you have at your place some written testimony from the Defenders of Wildlife, and I'm not sure if they'll be here to testify in person today. They handed this in yesterday. And also some testimony from John McDonald, Oregon Association of Conservation Districts, but he is here to testify.
Okay. And as I call up parties, if you could limit your testimony to 3 to 5 minutes. Remember the Gettysburg Address was about 2 minutes. Mr. McDonald and Mr. Warner. John McDonald and Fred Warner. If you both come forward, and Mr. McDonald, why don't you start off?
Can we vote on something, Mr. Chair? Chair Devlin and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to this EOWEB budget. I think this is a very, very important instrument that we have to use for the betterment of the natural resources in Oregon. The Oregon Association of Conservation Districts is vitally interested in the fact that sufficient support is going to go to the conservation districts as well as to the watershed councils. The watershed council being funded through OWEB's budget, we would request the amount of $6 million. We also were requesting that sufficient money be given to the non-capital funding, because that is absolutely essential to be able to both fund watershed councils and the technical assistance that they provide, as well as the other things that are necessary, such as monitoring, outreach, education, and the other functions that non-capital funding provides. We realize that there are some issues about the availability of non-capital funding, but I just want to reemphasize how urgent it is in order to be able to utilize all the capital funding. I am very, very concerned that we're going to be leaving money on the table. We are not only using this technical assistance to take advantage of the capital funding coming through the OWEB budget and lottery monies and so forth, we're also using it to leverage all the federal funding. A lot of the stuff comes through the farm bills, through USDA funding, also some of the monies that comes through the Bureau of Land Management and Bureau of Reclamation, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and so forth, is leveraged by the people working through districts and councils to make those projects get on the ground. So I think the key word today is capacity. Are we going to provide the capacity for the local councils and districts to be able to do the work on the ground? They're doing great work. The only issue is how much of it can they do with the capacity they have. I think we need to have increased capacity. The figures that come out are at least $6 million for each. Hopefully you can find those funds at some point in time. We are very proud of what they're doing, but we just need to be doing more. We're leaving work out there that needs to be done. We have waiting lists on almost every single council or district's table. The technical standards are increasing, so the amount of training and technical assistance, certifications and so forth that our people are being required to handle is going up. Costs are going up. There's a lot of things that are increasing, but I think we're not keeping track. We've had the same budgets for councils and districts for the last 10 years, and certainly that's not keeping up with the demand. My other opinion that I'd like to share is a personal one, and that is I think we need to be doing more of the good things we're doing, because we're barely keeping up with, if not in some cases losing ground, against the pressures that are trying to push us against the use of natural resources. So I'd like to have us make sure that we're utilizing this good plan we have called the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds to its fullest, and to utilize the districts and the councils as the local delivery system that are very, very important to get all this work done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. We'll go to Commissioner Warner, and then we'll take questions. Commissioner Warner.
Thank you, Senator Devlin and members of the committee. My name is Fred Warner, Jr. I'm the commission chair from the Baker County Board of Commissioners. As Commissioner, in rural eastern Oregon, I deal with natural resources on a frequent basis. The lifeblood of our economy is agriculture and natural resource-based recreation. Both of these industries rely on clean, abundant water resources and healthy waterways and riparian areas. In Baker County, the local Powder Basin Watershed Council and three of our soil and water conservation districts are the frontline personnel that assure proper use of funds for technical assistance, monitoring, public-private partnerships, and project coordination from start to finish. It's an extremely important piece of the watershed enhancement pie to have adequate funding for local entities that develop local plans in conjunction with our citizens. Specifically, when local landowners or citizens identify issues of concern in Baker County, we need on-the-ground personnel to be able to identify the scope of work, identify partners, work with private and public entities to coordinate planning efforts, help identify funding sources, identify timelines, and coordinate permitting, monitor all the results, oversee capital expenditures, and provide staff to assist the incubation of a project from to its final implementation. Without this important capacity, quality projects cannot be completed. In addition, these are the people that help our local citizen work through the federal and state bureaucratic process. This, above all, can frustrate willing collaborators in restoration processes. Baker County has a number of major projects. One of the most extensive is the Pine Creek Watershed near Halfway, Oregon. It's in a floodplain. Many of you may have heard the issues we had last year. This is a big watershed with big boulders. They roll down. We've been working with both our Watershed Council and the Soil and Water Conservation District to come up with a long-term solution to this critical watershed. I would be happy to answer any questions you'd have about any projects we have in Baker County. It's imperative that local staffing for both the watershed councils and the soil and water conservation districts be maintained and fully supported. Without this critical piece of the puzzle, none of the worthwhile projects at the local level can be completed in a cost-effective, environmentally sound manner. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Questions for Mr. McDonald or Commissioner Warner?
Just a quick
question. Yes, Senator Nelson.
With John, you're talking about capacity. You guys are stretched to the limit. So all goes back to money, goes back to manpower. What does it go back to?
Chair Devlin and Senator Nelson, let me speak specifically about a district, and that is the one that I happen to be chairman of. We do not receive sufficient funding from this particular, pot of money through the state to even finance one resource technician. We have a person who's certified. They have a master's degree. They're gaining experience and so forth. They're doing the job as best they can. They're getting mentoring. But our ability to maintain that one person is that we have to go out and find additional funding to supplement that salary. So part of it is just the ability to hold, maintain qualified, experienced people, and to be able to do, the state's work through the funding that we receive here. And the state's work, I mean by SB 1010. Because the money that we get, through you guys is actually earmarked for SB 1010. It's not earmarked for all the other stuff that, you could get involved in. We are here to implement that program under technical assistance to landowners and what's called the local management agency responsibilities, which is the planning and development of what the rules are that apply to each watershed. So it's the capacity, like in that one experience, just to be able to maintain and hold a good qualified person. There's also the capacity, the fact that we have 28 people sitting on a waiting list that we can't even get to. We also have about 150 plans that have to be redone, which is the law requires it every 3 years, and we don't even have the time to get around to upgrading those plans. So some of them, go out of date, and therefore the person's exposed to the rules again if they haven't finished the project. So it is a capacity, and this is throughout the entire state. There's almost, well, maybe I can think of three districts right now that could say they have as much capacity as they need, and those happen to be the few that have large local tax bases. The rest of us are struggling to keep the people we have, to keep them employed with decent, you know, remunerations. Very few of us provide any benefits other than health insurance. That's the only stuff that, you know, most of them get. And it's just a constant struggle to try to, you know, keep things going and keep things alive and stay up the workload.
Yes.
Well, for Fred, I guess, from Baker County's viewpoint, you know, that's not part of my district, but I kind of know what's happening over there. Losing population, you know, basically economic or natural resource-based economy. I mean, are you having the same problems with this capacity, or do you have base, or what's happening with you guys?
Yeah, I think we suffer or endure the same type of things. We have a long list, and hopefully we have some people from the Soil and Water Conservation District. In Baker County, the county commission funds our SB 1010 plans through the Soil and Water Conservation District. We've just funded the Powder Basin Watershed Council to do the initial study on Pine Creek and Halfway because, you know, the process takes so long and the issues with the city of Halfway, we just needed to do that. But the reality is I'm a capital kind of guy. I want to do projects. But you have to, I mean, in order to qualify for any type of money, you have to have decent plans, and you have to have a broad-based group of people look at it. I don't come from the environmental community, but they have strong, and we have fish issues. So, I mean, we have to bring everybody together and then find out what's right for the watershed. And, you know, we're doing a lot of meanders to try to get the rivers back to natural state and try to do that in conjunction with people and agriculture. And from my perspective, the watershed councils and the soil and water conservation districts they're our only tool to help our citizens. And whatever funding, I mean, we're talking $6 million for capacity for both of those. I mean, that's probably a minimum of what we really need. But I just can't stress how important it is to decision makers like myself to have that expertise to try to get projects moving forward.
Chair Devlin and members of the committee, I have one other thought to the capacity that I think is absolutely essential, and that is watershed councils, when they were originally designed, had a purpose of doing community forums, community discussions, community planning, and stuff like that. I think they're having the capacity to have the time to be able to continue to do those things is absolutely essential. We as districts look forward to them. I mean, we depend on watershed councils to help us do, you know, the reviews of plans, long-range plans, determining what kinds are the needs in the communities, what are the resource concerns that need to be addressed, what are the priorities and so forth, and to have those kinds of discussions from a broad base of citizens and stakeholder groups, I think is absolutely essential. And we've confined some of the ability of the districts the councils by limited funding to not have the time and the capacity and the freedom to be able to engage in as much community involvement and community input and community participation as we really need to be doing. And I think that's one area where the increased non-capital funding for councils would be immeasurably helpful.
Representative Dingfeld.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And some of you may know that I used to be an employee of the Washington County Soil and Water Conservation District when I worked for the Watershed Council. And so I got the benefit of actually seeing working in the Soil and Water Conservation District and working for the Watershed Council. So I got to see both operations. And, John, would it be fair to say that over the years there's also been a decline in federal funding and support for technical assistance? Because that was my observation, is that you know, we used to have a lot more support from the NRCS and a lot more technical resources at the federal level that seem to be declining with the cuts in federal budgets, and I think that's certainly impacted the districts and councils.
Chair Devlin and Vice Chair Dingfelder, I think that's absolutely true across the board. The number of staff of NRCS people who are assigned as technical resource specialists has decreased nationally, as also in Oregon. The available funding, which is going out again as capital funding, USDA Farm Bill programs and so forth, has in some cases even increased, while the manpower to put the stuff on the ground has decreased. NRCS has actually contracted with some of the districts and also in some ways with some of the councils to provide the technical assistance that they can no longer give. They're currently going through a series of training programs, trying to train other individuals, both in the councils and the districts and also in private enterprise called, you know, technical service providers, to be able to do their work because they're not being staffed to do it anymore. And this is across the board where, you know, the number of people we used to count on to do this are fewer, and therefore the demand that we do it is greater. It's also true of the lowering of the Pacific Salmon Recovery Funding and so forth that's been available for the whole situation. The funding going to OWEB is lesser and even more shaky than it's ever been.
Thank you both.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
We'll jump around here a little bit. I have a group of four. Liz Vollmer, Buell, Karina Friel, Christine Logan, and Jeannie Ginter, all from the Siosla Watershed Council. I think if you want to organize this and first two come up, or if you want to move the chair, that's fine too. And if you would identify yourself for the record, and I'll let you organize your group of four or five, however many it is.
You want us to identify first?
As each one of you speaks,
okay.
Just identify yourself.
Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. My name is Liz Vollmer Buell, and I work for the Siosla Watershed Council. I'm the monitoring coordinator and about six other job titles as well. I manage the volunteer water quality monitoring program and several restoration projects. I'm here with three volunteers from our volunteer water quality monitoring program. And non-capital funds fund the volunteer water quality monitoring program and many of the other monitoring projects that provide data for us to be able to put restoration projects on the ground so that we're putting them where they're going to be most effective and where they're most needed. And council support enables councils to implement both the restoration programs and the monitoring programs. And our education programs. And I'm here with three excellent examples of volunteers who have both benefited from and benefit the council programs. First, I have two high school students from the Mapleton High School. And I also have an estuary landowner, Jeannie, here. And they're all going to speak about their experience with the volunteer water quality monitoring program. And I just have to say that these are three excellent volunteers who have done a lot for us. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Karina Friel, Mapleton High School. I'm in 12th grade.
Christina Logan, also from Mapleton High School, in 11th grade.
I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to address the committee. Since the early 1990s, the Siosla Watershed Council has let students at Mapleton help them to improve our ecosystem by collecting and analyzing water samples. Students have duly enjoyed testing and going to Karnowski Creek with Liz and Cricket. We have a lot of fun working together because to them, this isn't just a job, it's a passion. Our time spent out of the classroom and in our community directly affects our habitat. We do more than stand in a room and make water change colors. We add chemicals to the water to deduce whether or not dissolved oxygen is present in the Siosla River and surrounding bodies of water.
you to identify yourself again for the record.
I'm Christina Logan, Mapleton High School, 11th grade. Without the Sayufa Watershed Council taking time to test the water, our future surroundings might not appear as lush and healthy as they do today. Some of the things that we have learned throughout our experiences with the Sayusaw Watershed Council will accompany us for the duration of our lives. We have learned the importance of involving ourselves in our community, and the support that we add to it means a lot. We have also gained a better understanding of our ecosystem and what makes it tick. We appreciate the services rendered through the OWEB-funded Water Quality Monitoring Program. The effect it has had upon our lives, as well as that of our local wildlife, is something that, fortunately, we will never forget.
Thank you.
My name is Jeannie Ginter, and I'm a resident of Florence, Oregon. And I'd like to thank you for inviting us here to speak about our Watershed Council and our community. I don't feel very knowledgeable about Watershed Councils, how they're funded and so on. So today I just want to speak about why I desire to work with the Water Quality Monitoring Program. My husband and I have adopted two sites, and for the past 4 years we've gone out about monthly to collect samples, and then I usually go back to the lab and help process those and other collected samples. When I moved to Florence 22 years ago, it was because of all the seemingly untouched natural beauty, particularly the lakes and the streams and the rivers. I was in awe. And naively, I thought, gee, it's always going to be this way. But recently, with all the snowballing development, and I know that that's not going to stop, I have some concerns have come to mind. Some of them are, how would we know if there was a potential source of pollution? And if one was identified, how would we know if it was getting worse or effects, the management effects were really working? And how in all of this can we get a balance between the development and the agriculture and the environment? And so I feel that the program that the Sayusaw Watershed Council has in place is providing some of that information. And the data that's been gathered over time is going to let us know if a problem exists, and if so, if and where it exists. So I'm just glad to be a very small part of that program and that gathering of the data. On the other side of this, then, recently my husband and I purchased 13 acres of land in the watershed, in the Sayusaw watershed, and 5 of it is wetlands. So now we're faced with, how do we develop our land without an impact on it? And I really know that things that I have learned and observed through my involvement with the Watershed Council have given me the information and a commitment to do just that, the best that we can. And so as I sat down to try to put this together and get some notes and do some reading up and everything, I came across this just little short, simple thing, and I thought it said quite a bit. Everyone impacts a watershed, and the watershed impacts everyone. So thank you.
Questions? Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Buckley, John Buckley. And Mr. Moriarty. And Mr. Buckley, why don't you start off? And I have a problem with pronunciation this morning. Mr. Moriarty, why don't you let us know at the end of your testimony how many of your parties have arrived?
Good morning. My name is John Buckley. I'm the district manager of the East Fork Irrigation District in Hood River, and I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to come in and speak today. I am here to speak on behalf of the great effects on how a project can be started and work towards completion through help and financial assistance from the efforts of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. I would like to speak to you a little bit today about what OWEB has helped us do on a project, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about the project. The Central Canal Pipeline Project, this is the one that we've named it, was envisioned in the late 1990s by the East Fork Irrigation District in consultation with the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality and also the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Now, several aspects of the East Fork system were failing to meet regulatory standards administered by the state agencies. The primary problems associated with the system included a violation of Oregon DEQ water quality standards being caused by the use of Neal Creek for transporting water between the upper and lower east side laterals. Also, an inadequate upstream adult fish passage and downstream juvenile fish passage at the lower east side lateral diversion. And also the potential for a future takings of the ESA threatened fish in the East Fork of the Hood River. After a thorough discussion of these issues, East Fork proposed the Central Canal Project as a way to cooperatively augment river flows, improve water quality, and eliminate the fish barrier. The company decided these goals could be realistically achieved by converting the current central and east side lateral systems to a large pipeline and convey water directly to the beginning of the lower east side lateral. Importantly, the new pipeline would eliminate the use of the Neal Creek for water conveyance. With these goals, East Fork contracted an engineering firm in June of 2000 to define a strategy for implementing the pipe project. After the district had purchased this, 1 year later, the consultant had completed a design report that presented a route, schematic plans, cost estimates, and the notion of completing the project in three distinct phases. The key element of the plan called for building a buried pipeline along the existing central canal alignment, size large enough to convey water in the central lateral and east side laterals. The plan called for starting the pipeline at the existing terminus of the central canal, then follow the existing central lateral right of the way of approximately 2.8 miles. From that point, a new pipeline would be constructed to carry the 42 cubic feet per second lower east side diversion water allocation. Once on the east side of the Neal Creek, a new discharge structure would put water directly into the lower east side lateral. East Fork completed the construction of the first phase of the pipeline project in the fall winter of 2003-2004 with OWEB funding. Phase one included construction of a debris trap and 1.3 miles of 72-inch plastic pipe. On the phase two, which was during the fall of 2004 and also continuing into 2005 and 6, also a 1.7 mile, 60-inch pipeline was also constructed. And this was also help funded by, and I'll go through these figures here in a minute, with OWEB. We are presently now going into a third phase, which will be approximately about a two-year program with that, and that's approximately 3.9 million total on that. And I might also want to mention that we are also in partners with the Bonneville Power Administration through help of Confederated Tribes, the United States Forest Service Title II grant money, and also the USDA or DI Bureau of Reclamation. That's a 2025 grant that's been available. And it's been very hard to try and get grants put together, and I would like to say that OWEB has been very good about helping us get these grants to go through. On the Phase 1 grant, they have come up with $300,000 to help us on the first phase. The second phase, they have come up with $400,000 to help us, and now they're in a process to help us finish it at $1.4 million. $900,000 being in 07 and $500,000 being in 08. So what I would really like to say for you to consider, this is a win-win situation for conservation and many other impacts that will affect Neal Creek and the East Fork of the Hood River. Water is the future for all mankind, especially with agriculture and also anything to do with conservation. So when you think of global warming, also think of conservation. I would like to thank you for this opportunity to speak. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Good morning, Chair Devlin, members of the committee. My name is John Moriarty, and I'm the statewide coordinator for the Network of Oregon Watershed Councils. Thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. I know this isn't the first time you've seen me in the past several months, so I really appreciate your willingness to listen to me and hear from me once again. As you're hearing today, effective and efficient restoration and protection of our watersheds depend upon sufficient investment of non-capital funds. These non-capital funds support watershed councils in their essential landowner and community outreach and education work. They support soil and water conservation district water quality management planning. They provide essential project development and planning, technical assistance, assessment, education, outreach, and monitoring services. In short, these non-capital funds support all of the preparatory efforts that make efficient and effective on-the-ground projects possible. We all recognize that projects and outcomes are crucial to our success in restoring watersheds for wildlife habitat, fish, and humans. However, it's not just what we do that's important, it's how we do it. And so I'm going to shamelessly plagiarize a well-known credit card commercial for just a moment, and I'm going to use some numbers that are just for illustration purposes only, and I'm going to put it this way. 1 mile of streamside fencing, $1,400. 2 off-stream watering systems, $9,000. Removal of 1 culvert and replacement where it blocks fish passage, $57,000. Creation of the community relationships to implement these projects, priceless. Your non-capital investment in watershed councils and our partners is an investment in something that we really can't put a price on, a new way of doing business. Regulatory pressure is not enough. Folks may comply, but there's no ownership of that change. There may even be resentment. However, when people come together through a watershed council and decide to change the way they do things based on challenging conversations, meetings in the field, those changes last. But that work's not easy, it's not quick, and it's not free. Our request that you fund $6 million for watershed council support, $6 million for soil and water conservation districts, and $14 million for OEB's non-capital grant program is a request that you make a modest but critical investment in both the valuable and the priceless. It's not clear to me right now that there are sufficient non-capital resources identified in the co-chair's budget to support these critical programs. However, I am clear that the status quo is not enough. If these non-capital funds are not currently identified, I encourage you to consider the difficult issue of increasing general fund support to natural resource agencies in order to free up Measure 66 funding to meet these needs. Pressure on our natural resources is not going to diminish in the years ahead. Yet these natural resources, this natural capital, is the very foundation of all that makes our state so special. Oregon is leading the nation right now with an innovative approach to addressing the increasing pressures on these natural resources. But without sufficient and consistent investment in this effort, the challenge won't be met. Then, maybe 5 or 10 or 15 years from now, we may find ourselves looking for a new approach to meet an even more difficult challenge in the face of increased population, perhaps in the face of shifting climate patterns, we don't know. And my question is, would we come up with something more innovative then? Something more innovative than what we have now? How long will it take us to rebuild what we've created to this point? And would we choose to fund it at that point? I believe we have an opportunity to make this investment today and maintain a commitment for future generations. I thank you for making the difficult decisions now. Thank you.
Questions?
Yes, Senator Nelson. What does the chair's budget say? Was it $14 million, $6 million, $6 million? Are we talking for the programs? Sort of lost track of all that. Where are you?
Paul.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the co-chair budget has $4.1 million for watershed councils and $4.1 million for soil and water conservation districts. And that $4.1 million for conservation districts includes adding the $650,000 that was taken out in the governor's recommended budget.
And was there a $14 million figure?
Mr. Chairman of the committee, the non-capital grant program, there's been some puts and takes. I think if you were to consider all the federal funds that would be available during the course of the biennium, you'd probably get close to $14 million.
Is that kind of where you're at? I'm sort of confused about all these figures here.
Yes. Chair Devlin, Senator Nelson, it's challenging. The figures are, I think, a little bit unclear even to me and I think to many people looking at them. As you've heard, it's a step in the right direction. We're not there yet. And of course, one of the concerns that we have and that you've heard to some extent is whether those federal funds, the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds, have been declining every year up to this date, and there's quite a bit of uncertainty as to whether they're going to be here or not, and in this year, in this biennium. And so depending on those funds alone, I think, is dangerous if we want to really maintain and invest in this program and make it work. And as we're hearing, this non-capital piece is really crucial to getting that growing capital budget on the ground effectively and efficiently.
Anything additional? Thank you both.
Thank you.
John.
Yes.
Morard. Is everyone here? Just about.
Everyone, I believe, but Mr. Weeds. Thank you for asking, Chair Devil.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Dana Erickson and Mary Ray Thompson.
I'm sorry, excuse me. Dana Erickson is here, but Mary Ray Thompson.
Okay. And Mr. Norton. Okay. Thank you. Ms. Erickson, if you would start.
Thank you, Senator Devlin, and members of the committee. Mary Ray Thompson sends her apologies. She's calving and logging and then had to call in a repairman this morning, and that was that. So I was heading to Salem by myself. I serve as the coordinator of the Long Tom River Watershed Council. We cover a very large area in the Upper Willamette Basin from Monroe to Junction City to Notai to Eugene. I'm here to testify today on the significance of the non-capital funds in OEB's budget. The non-capital funds are the ones that we use to ensure the meaningful spending of the capital funds. In the Long Tom watershed, we've used those funds for council support, technical assistance, water quality monitoring, and watershed assessment. The specific story Mary Ray and I are going to tell you about today, and she sends her apologies, is how the non-capital funds have made us able to respond to the community. It starts back when I was reading the local newsletter of the Farm Bureau. I thought much of it was good and useful, but there was some misinformation in there about water and water quality. I asked some growers if they would like to monitor the water quality with the council, and we had some tough conversations about that, and they said yes, and we prepared a grant proposal for OEB. I wanted to report on this to the local Farm Bureau chapter before we submitted it and ask for their assistance. I was not entirely welcome when I walked into the room. These were all early forgings of relationships. But by the end, I believe we became one of the first watersheds for which the Farm Bureau contributed match funding to our monitoring program. Quite unusual. And their members really got involved. We had landowners throughout the watershed monitoring alongside DEQ staff training them. We had jokes because there's pipettes to stick in the stream and measure, and so we had a joke with the landowner with the gun because the DEQ person was right there. It was really funny, actually. Not only did the Farm Bureau participate, but they asked us why we weren't able to fund monitoring on more properties so more people could get the information they needed to take their own action and do the right thing. Not a question we expected at the outset. One of the pledges we made with this monitoring grant was to share the information and help people understand what the data meant. This included presentations to the Farm Bureau, town forums at the rural libraries, and an invitation to the Small Woodland Owners meeting by Mary Ray Thompson. Mary Ray and Andy Thompson are longstanding members of their community, and Mary Ray's family has owned land in Ferguson Creek for multiple generations, and they log and raise cattle there. They wanted to know where the hot spots were, where the problems were, so that they could decide what to do about them. And we made that presentation to them. Through this connection on water, we were able to move forward together and plan a problem-solving meeting with about 10 neighbors in Ferguson Creek. I wasn't able to describe yet what we needed to do in a specific grant for the capital funds, and I certainly was not going to promise outcomes on behalf of landowners I hadn't talked to yet. And it was only because of the council support funding that I was able to respond to the community need, their interest for information, and learning. That's the stuff that leads to action. Mary Ray and I built the invitation list together, reaching out to people in the community that they didn't normally associate with, but that we both thought were important in considering the health of the creek and its watershed. In the end, after the presentations of the information and standing by to answer questions and arrange tours over the course of a half a year, we were able to develop six major projects to address fish passage, in-stream habitat, and water quality in the basin. Again, importantly, I could not have promised this outcome beforehand. That really would have been speaking for them before they had a chance to speak to me themselves. By having that council support funding, we were able to support Ferguson Creek residents and allow people the time to make their own decisions with quality information and a helping hand, a very important role. You know, now some of the logs from Mary Ray's own property that she and her husband logged were placed upstream for fish habitat on the Holtzbauer's place. And the Holtzbauers, shall we say, are very different from the Thompsons in their worldview. We have a joke now that if the logs move downstream, they'll just be coming home to Mary Ray. This kind of collaborative work in each creek basin reduces some of the risk of the unknown in the science of restoration, and people appreciate being part of the full story of the creek. I believe this is happening all over the state. We did the same work in Poodle Creek, solving fish passage problems around a picnic table on the Allison property. I just wanted to share a few comments from the landowners up there. We've reconnected with neighbors we have not ever known how to work with. We have built a connection with people that are different from us. This will make life easier here. We have gotten to know people now that for 5 years, since they moved in, we've only waved at as they drove up and down the road. This neighborhood-based work, this work that builds community, it does more than address the issue that these are real people doing this work. It saves money. You see, in each of the individual projects in the basin, people were able to support the match needs for each other to apply for grants, eliminating our need to use grant funds to buy logs, put in fencing, and plant trees. It takes the non-capital funds and uses them to ensure the meaningful and cost-effective spending of the capital funds and gets neighborhood cooperation and community building to boot. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Horton.
Thank you, Senator Devlin and members of the subcommittee. My name is Alan Horton, and I'm the managing director of Oregon Trout. On behalf of our board of directors and 4,000 members and supporters around the state, thank you for the opportunity to comment today on funding for OLEB, particularly the importance of non-capital funding. When Oregon Trout sponsored Measure 66 in 1998, we did so with the express purpose of providing expanded support for both on-the-ground watershed restoration projects and non-capital support for those projects. In other words, we wanted to bring more new resources to bear intelligently applied. In fact, that was a big part of the selling point. Not only would new funds flow for actual dirt work, but would also support the design, monitoring, assessment, and education efforts necessary to make the dirt work meaningful. That's why so much of the funding provided by the measure, 35%, was dedicated to these non-capital purposes. Ultimately, funding for local conservation groups, monitoring, assistance, and education are required to ensure that on-the-ground efforts are efficiently and meaningfully executed. The premise is simple. Watershed restoration projects are complex, multi-segmented efforts. You can't just start with a backhoe and a shovel. There's a chain of events that lead to success in the long term. The first link in this chain is assessment. We must properly evaluate the issues that are being addressed by a project prior to execution to make sure that the funds are flowing to priority work. Second is design. Simply put, good planning leads to good work on the ground. Third, monitoring, both during and after the actual dirt work. Was the project executed correctly? Is it actually addressing the needs that were identified during the assessment period? Over time, the monitoring and evaluation becomes even more valuable as benefits accumulate and adjustments to the project need to be made to address changes on the ground. Last, but certainly not least, are education and outreach. This is a key focus, certainly for us at Oregon Trout. We believe that restoration and education efforts must go hand in hand in order to guarantee lasting and meaningful watershed health. Even if we fix every stream without public understanding of these investments, our work can be undone by future generations. A most telling example of this is as close as our own backyard when we look at the situation on the Willamette River, especially in Portland. In 1972, the National Geographic magazine published a cover story that declared the Willamette River as a river restored and held it up as a national model for urban river restoration. We all know what happened next. In December 2000, the EPA declared the Port of Portland a Superfund site. And a lot of the work that had been heralded in 1972 was discovered to be sadly in need of additional efforts starting in the year 2000. Now, this is a complex issue, and there were many facets involved with it, and I'm cartooning it here a little bit. But one of the points that we can make is that if Measure 66 had existed and if OWEB had been around in 1972 and if appropriate monitoring, evaluation, and education tools had been in place at that time, the Willamette would probably be in better shape now than it is. I think it's a testimony to the importance of non-capital funding that we continue to monitor projects even after they're complete, as is evidenced by the Willamette. In other words, in our view, education serves as our insurance policy, and restoration work is ultimately futile without it. For these reasons, among others, we are supporting the funding recommendations laid out in the letter to the committee earlier this month, signed by a number of conservation groups from around the state, as follows. $26 million in OWEB non-capital grant funding, consisting of $6 million for the Watershed Council capacity funding, $6 million for Soil and Water Conservation District capacity funding, and $14 million for the OWEB non-capital grants program. We also recommend $61 million in OWEB capital grant program funding. Oregonians entrust OWEB with a great responsibility here, not only evaluating on-the-ground work, but also fairly evaluating and distributing funds for the more subjective efforts of assessment, education, and other non-capital programs. As a former grantmaker, I know all too well the challenges that face any agency in distributing funds of this type. That said, OWEB shows a clear commitment to responsible stewardship of Measure 66 dollars, and we remain very confident in their capacity to manage a large grant budget. Oregon Trout urges a better balance of funding for non-capital work, more in line with the original intent of Measure 66 as we drafted it, so OWEB can execute its mandate properly and ensure that on-the-ground efforts continue to be meaningful, well-executed, and lasting. Thank you again for your time on this. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Any questions from Mr. Horton or Ms. Erickson? Yes, Senator Nelson.
Just to follow up, I mean, we're talking about the $26 million. That was the previous testimony. I'm still not clear about where are we. In relation to the co-chair's budget, there was a 4.1, 4.1. Then there's this other $14 million. Where are we sitting with this exactly? This puts it down in writing that there's 6, 6, and 14, mm-hmm. and I've heard 4.1, 4.1, another $8 million from Pacific Coast, or where is this all coming from?
Well, obviously, I believe, Senator Nelson, there's a debate going on about whether or not we will receive the amount that we anticipate in the Pacific Coast salmon.
Is that part of the $14
million? Part. Well, and to be just as frank as I can be, even though there is a co-chair's budget for this agency, we probably will be pushing back on some portions of that budget. And we will also still have to deal with the issues surrounding how much Measure 66 funds will be in other budgets. So definitive numbers are not really definitive at this point.
Well, I mean, like many of these measures, the original intent of Measure 66 was, of course, to provide new money for watershed restoration efforts. Over time, these funds get diluted. We understand that. But it was our hope that other agency budgets would continue to be funded out of the general fund over time. But to the extent that we can keep Measure 66 dollars flowing for what we feel was their intended purpose, that's really what we're advocating.
And just to put a little bit of co-chair spin on this, no one ever anticipated the level of growth in funding in Measure 66 funds that we've experienced.
Or the level of need in watershed restoration efforts, probably.
This guy's good. I think he's
good. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. To follow up on Senator Nelson's line of questioning, I too have the same huge question mark. And one of the things, Mr. Chair, that the co-chairs were very clear about was that, you know, where these funds get reallocated was to happen here in the subcommittee. And I think it would behoove the members if we had a little more clarity on exactly what the co-chairs had laid out so that we know, you know, what to advocate for and how to try and see where the money is. So I think it would be very helpful for us if we knew where the all of the Measure 66 non-capital dollars are between the different agencies that this subcommittee has responsibility for. And I think it'd also be very helpful for us to understand where the PCSRF, thank you, fits into that equation.
I agree with you, Representative Burley, and I think probably what it'd be very important to do, because some of that's not entirely decided at this point, is as we go through, literally in a very real way, as we go through the next budgets that we are going through after this, is where you will see some of the Measure 66 funds, and maybe we should highlight those so it's very clear to people where there are Measure 66 funds being used. Some of them, actually, very appropriately. Some of them people might question how appropriate. Also, in terms of, and I don't, PCRF is probably easier to say, right? I think it's just a debate. Paul, you had a comment about that yesterday in terms of what your expectations were, what you've been hearing about PCRF.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe that the latest information I have from OWEB, and frankly Tom could probably speak better to this, was roughly around $6 million for the current federal fiscal year that would be coming through. We don't know for sure. NOAA Fisheries hasn't made the money available. They did pass the budget out based on a continuing resolution. Presumably there was supposed to be no earmark, so last year we got $4.5 million. I believe $2 million was taken out for earmarks. I believe that we're on schedule for $6.5 million, but there's still some discussions about if NOAA Fisheries will be holding back some of the money, earmark or no earmark, for some of the needs that they see that they want to use the money for. So I think that still might be up in the air a little bit, but the last I heard was maybe $1 million might be left out, so that'd be about $5.5 million, I think, for this current federal fiscal year.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just kind of clarification. I was just looking at it. It looks like the governor's recommended budget was about $106 million, close to that. The testimony that we have in front of us from Mr. Horton is there's $87 million that they're actually requesting. So is this, the difference between it would be about $20 million, is that?
That's in the ballpark, Senator Nelson.
That's in the ballpark. But is that all the funds that are going to the other agencies, or are we taking more out of that? Is that what we're talking about here? That's the money that we have out here?
Senator Nelson, I think what you will see when we get to the other budgets is I think that you will see some funds, Measure 66 funds, going to things that are clearly Measure 66 oriented. You will also see some that were formerly funded by Measure 66 funds becoming general funds. But I believe why the co-chairs are reluctant in a way to basically utilize general funds in some areas like the PCRF, and when we get to some other budgets, and we're not in a hearing on those budgets, agencies' earlier predictions of declining federal revenues in other areas. I think what you will see is that a higher expectation that federal revenues will be at higher levels than what the agencies predicted in the fall, which is actually when the final portions of the budget came together at the executive level, and so that there won't be as great a need for backfill with general funds in some budgets, and there will be a greater anticipation that the PCRF funds, at least to some degree, will still be there. But there's some of the areas, well, I'll give you one. People will always debate the $6.8 million that we dedicated Measure 66 funds to the Fish and Game Division of the State Police. But if anybody would like to make the case for removing that from the State Police.
Certainly not removing it, Senator Devlin, but perhaps replacing it.
Well, everybody... we don't have an unlimited checkbook here.
Understood.
And so, but we will get into that in more detail. Actually, we are I hate that expression, but I can't think of any. The rubber is hitting the road in the next week, because we are going to start to see where these things are playing out, because we're literally into the core natural resource budgets. So, any additional questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
We just have three left. Sorry that you've had to wait, Mr. Labby. Please come forward. And then Ms. Hens. It looks like Hensy, not Hensy.
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 Good morning. My name is Jim Labby. I'm serve as urban conservationist at Audubon Society Portland. I'm also a volunteer and board member with the Johnson Creek Watershed Council. I'm here this morning to echo the words of others you heard to support non-capital funding for watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts whose capacity is really critical to achieving, advancing the state's natural resource goals, the Oregon watershed, the Oregon plan for and watersheds, and certainly some of the other state natural resource initiatives. And it's been said several times today, I'll say it again, that human resources really are critical to actualizing a lot of these projects. There has been a trend I've seen at all levels. I work a lot at the city and regional level of shifting from wanting to fund capital projects to the detriment of non-capital funding. And it really is getting to the point I see where we're missing opportunities because we're, apart from the overall decline in funding, there's this imbalance. And so I urge you to consider that really strongly in making this decision. There's no doubt that the non-cap funding staff, the staff of watershed councils and soil water conservation districts is really an essential element to this collaborative conservation. It's really the staff time and energy that allows these local organizations to engage citizens and volunteers and leverage funding to and resources to really outstanding levels, 1 to 5, sometimes up to 1 in 10 in some cases we've experienced in our watershed. And I really think that I want to impress on you that this leveraging really goes beyond OEB's investments in specific projects and specific watersheds. This experience and expertise in implementing watershed restoration really accrues in the minds and hearts of our citizens and increases our overall capacity to do this work in our citizenry and our workforce. And to achieve watershed restoration conservation to a real higher degree of excellence. I, after finishing college in the mid-90s, I worked for a watershed council in Southern Oregon, the Applegate River Watershed Council in the Rogue Basin. And there's no question that it shaped my professional development and my civic commitment in Oregon. The investment that was made with non-capital OEB dollars, partially in paying my wage, was not lost once I left the job. I went on to do a lot of work, and it certainly led to my decision to volunteer 4 years on the Johnson Creek Watershed Council and my decision to come down here today and speak to you on this topic. So it really is, you know, this enterprise we're involved in Oregon that we're investing in is, like other parts of our economy, it's a knowledge-based enterprise. It's a local knowledge-based enterprise, and the benefits go beyond the specific projects, far beyond. I see that all the time in my work with Johnson Creek. I mentioned the imbalance. I think it's clear that's occurring between capital and non-capital spending. There's this desire, understandable, of elected officials to want to fund brick-and-mortar type things and see those things, something you can touch and cut a ribbon around, that kind of thing. But it really is at a point where I think we're missing opportunities because we don't have just staff capacity to complement our volunteer board, and our the volunteers that work with the watershed on a regular basis. So I urge you to support the recommendations of the Network of Oregon Watershed Councils and to really invest the right balance of capital and non-capital funds to further the state's work, local and state work, to protect and restore our watersheds in Oregon. Thanks a lot for the opportunity to come down and share some thoughts. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Ms. Hensley.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to speak with you today. I appreciate it. I'm Allison Hensey. I'm the Program Director for Agriculture for the Oregon Environmental Council. And I want to start by complimenting the staff and director of OWEB. They are some of the most passionate, hardworking people I know, and they certainly don't work 40-hour weeks, and they work very hard to make sure that this money gets on the ground. And that it's done effectively. So I wanted to thank them for their work. I think you all have probably already seen this letter. If you don't have it in front of you, we can pass it out. Paul, should I give it to you? Yeah, okay. It's a letter signed by 8 different groups. And this is a collection of organizations that don't always agree on issues and don't always work together. And I think that's significant. It's signed by the Oregon Environmental Council, Oregonians for Food and Shelter, Defenders of Wildlife, the Farm Bureau, the Nature Conservancy, the Oregon Forest Industries Council, Oregon Trout, and the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. And it emphasizes the need to this committee that you've heard already today for sufficient non-capital funding and for sufficient funding for watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts at the same numbers that you've heard discussed already today. $6 million for watershed council capacity, $6 million for soil and water conservation district capacity, and $14 million for OWEB non-capital grants. And I think this letter is reflective of the groups and the work that OWEB funds, because that work brings together people who may not be on the same side politically and have different worldviews, but they come together because they share a love of their watershed and want to work together to solve natural resource problems and help the state meet its environmental goals. As you probably know, and as you've heard earlier today, they're not just getting the work done on the ground that helps meet the state's environmental goals, but they're also building community capacity to problem solve in the future around natural resource problems. As we see the issue of water supply becoming more and more significant, and it will into the future, they're building the capacity to deal with those problems collaboratively and problem solve around them, rather than these problems becoming conflicts in the future. About a quarter of the land in Oregon is in agricultural production, and another significant percentage is in forest land. Most of these landowners, with the small exception of programs like CAFO, don't have to receive a permit for the effects they have on water quality. And so they don't regularly engage with state regulatory programs, whether it's through DEQ or the Department of Agriculture or Fish and Wildlife. And so the only groups that are helping to translate the state's environmental goals to a large percentage of the land base in Oregon and helping them to meet the state's environmental goals are watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts. They don't operate in a silo. They don't just look at water quality or certain species habitat. They look at the whole picture and are paid to assess what the most important priorities are for improving the health of that watershed and helping the state meet its environmental goals. And they develop the local relationships and get to know the landowners and provide them with the assistance and the tools to meet those state goals. And so I think it's important to value the service that they provide there. I'm concerned that as you hear talk about the importance of non-capital funds and it's difficult to pin down the actual number of those funds in the co-chair's budget, I'm concerned that these funds are being approached as a bit of a slush fund, and that as other programs' needs are met, the non-capital grant program will be left with what isn't taken by others. And I think that I really urge you to provide leadership on this issue and commit to recognizing how important those grant funds are and to commit to a number that's sufficient to accomplish this work rather than just leaving in that fund what's left ever after everything else has been taken. So with that, I want to thank you for your time and see if there are any questions.
Questions? Thank you both very much. Ms. Evans, you will be our closing speaker. Unless, let's see. Did Mr. Weitz ever? No, he hasn't shown. Okay.
Chair Devlin and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity this morning. My name is Nan Evans. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Nature Conservancy here in Oregon. You may know, you probably have because I've talked to you over the years, the Nature Conservancy has been a long-time supporter and, in fact, one of the early developers of this notion of finding funds in a time when the state was not investing in its natural resources, in finding funds through the lottery to make investments and to make those investments that would protect our waters, our lands, our jobs, and using voluntary, non-regulatory methods to do that. That was what we believe Measure 66 is all about. It is an expression of what we value as Oregonians. You will find the Nature Conservancy on the list of supporters of all the arguments you've heard about the non-capital funding this morning. I want to direct most of my comments to the capital side, since you've already heard the non-capital a couple of times. But with one comment before I do that, I do want to add our support to the co-chair's budget that has taken money out of a regulatory program in the Department of Agriculture, CAFO, Combined Animal Feeding Operations Program. And what we're hoping is that that money will be replaced by general fund and that the non-capital Measure 66 money that did support it will find its way back into the non-capital programs of OWEB. But as I said, let me talk a bit about the capital program. I think the capital program is really important in terms of on-the-ground results. You had a conversation, I believe, yesterday about performance measures. You can measure the results of capital investment. You can measure them in terms of restored habitats. You can measure them in terms of protected places and local jobs. And the comment earlier about who would have expected the lottery to have grown so much over the last, 8 years? I would add to the comment earlier that who would have expected the development pressures to have increased so much? Who would have expected that we have a Measure 37 that is changing how we use our land? Who would have expected that our habitats in the state we love so much are as critically threatened as they are? And I want to give you one example of that. The Nature Conservancy is a science-based organization, and we have just completed an assessment of all the ecosystems in the nation, Canada, Alaska, and some parts of the rest of the world that we work in. And what we've done is we've looked at the state of the habitat and the biological populations in those ecosystems and the threats. And we have found on the west coast of the United States, there are only two ecoregions that we consider critically threatened. One of those is the Mediterranean-type ecosystem in sort of the Southern California area. The other is the Willamette Valley. Who would have thought that we're at a point where we need to make some very critical investments in the habitats we care about? So let me give you a couple of specifics comments about the capital project. First of all, if you look at the language of the ballot measure, it uses the phrase restoring and protecting, dedicated to restoring and protecting. The language that you hear most often from OWEB focuses only on the restoring side of that phrase, not the protecting side. The tools of protection are acquisition. They're either fee simple acquisition, willing land buyers, willing sellers, could be public or private, but it's buying property, or it's buying an interest in the land. Oftentimes those interests are in terms of conservation easements, where an underlying landowner maintains ownership of the property and may maintain farming and forestry on that property, but sells a development right to either an entity like OWEB or an entity like ourselves, the Nature Conservancy, in order to keep the property. It's still privately owned. It still may be in production, but you protect it by giving the owner some monetary value for the development rights that also would go with that property. Those are the tools of protection. OWEB has developed a series of guidelines and accountable process to evaluate acquisition projects, both the fee simple and the easements or less than fee simple kinds of projects. But if you look at how OWEB has chosen to spend its dollars, its capital dollars, something less than 10% is spent on these acquisition tools in total. I'm not undervaluing the importance of restoration, but what I'm suggesting to you is that we're missing an opportunity. We're missing an opportunity that won't come around again. Once land is lost, it's lost. We have an opportunity to work with willing landowners to do good things on their property using the tools of protection. What I would request and what the Nature Conservancy would request is that you consider directing OWEB to change the focus a bit, to look for those projects that will provide a lasting legacy of protected lands, to ask OWEB to actively encourage and support potential grantees to come forward, that you would ask OWEB to evaluate the whether an application meets the conservation objectives, whether it's an application between a willing buyer and a willing seller, and that you encourage OWEB, in fact, to increase the percentage of their capital budget spent on these lasting protection efforts. I don't know what the goal is. They're currently spending less than 10%. Maybe it's a third, maybe it's a half. I would leave that to your deliberations. But just to suggest to you that we're missing an opportunity, and we're missing an opportunity that won't come around again. So that's the first point on the capital program. The second point on the capital program is, if you look at the numbers, somewhere around $72 million of the Major 66 money, that would represent about 65% of what's available on the OWEB side, is for capital. And if we look at the numbers in the governor's budget or in the co-chair's budget, the amount of money coming to OWEB for their capital grants program is of the order of $60 million. That other, you know, what is it, $11 or $12 million, goes to other agencies. It goes to some very important capital projects in other agencies. It certainly goes to putting fish screens in under a Department of Fish and Wildlife program. It also goes in tune of about $5 million or so in both the governor's and I think the co-chair's budget to the Department of Agriculture for weed and pest control. The question I would have is that a capital expenditure? I don't know whether it is or not, frankly. And what I would suggest that you consider is a direction to OWEB to work with perhaps DAS, perhaps the other agencies, to provide public accountability to yourselves and to the public about are the capital projects, and I would say this is all capital expenditures, are all capital expenditures, in fact, capital? And that perhaps in the next 09 session, you have an opportunity to look at that to make sure that we are, in fact, investing those capital dollars appropriately. The last comment I would make is about salmon. I love salmon. This is a salmon state. It's an iconic sort of creature. I love being able to say to friends from out of state that this is the only state I know of that has a salmon in marble above one of the entry doors to the Capitol. But OWEB is not all about salmon. The language of the measure talks about fish and wildlife habitat. And I would encourage you to encourage OWEB to broaden that vision to make sure that we don't miss the opportunities to protect some of those non-salmon-bearing places, some of the high desert areas, the prairies, the oak savannas of the Willamette Valley, and that it be truly a broad-based fish and wildlife habitat protection program. With that, I'll close.
Any questions from the senators? Yes, Representative Flanagan.
And we can discuss it offline if it's a complicated answer. But I just wondered in your discussion about conservation easements or development rights, do you all have a formula that you use to sort of establish what kind of offer you're going to make, or is it all just really negotiation and then whatever you arrive at is the right amount?
If you're using public dollars, whether they're state or federal dollars, there is a very detailed appraisal process that is fair market value. So the it's not a matter of negotiation. It is based on fair market value. I don't know what happens if you're using solely private dollars, but if you're using any public dollars, the federal government has very, very strict requirements.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be fair market value to buy the whole property because you're not owning the property when it's over. You're just paying for them not to use it in a certain manner.
Chair Devlin, Representative Plant. The appraisers will look at the fair market value of, you know, the property and the I think they use the phrase the bundle of sticks or the bundle of rights that go with that property. And then if you remove some of those rights, they can assess how the value of the property changes, and that's how you get to the value of a development right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Byler, if you would like to close. Are you here to testify, or are you just here to listen? Okay. If you'd like to close.
Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, Tom Byler, the director of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. I'm not sure that there's a whole lot more to say with respect to the comments you heard from the public testimony folks testified today. They articulated their perspectives quite well. I do want to just maybe take a minute to walk you through some pieces of the book that we didn't talk about today, and I'm not intending to walk you through them in detail, but just to reference a few chapters that you may be interested in. One is chapter 8 is the budget summary. We've walked through that in relation to other issues. Chapter 9 is our budget notes. We had three budget notes, and a description of those budget notes and our responses over this biennium are included. Chapter 10, we have a peer review, one-pager that compares Oregon's efforts in conservation and restoration work compared to the states of Washington, California, and Idaho, where we're all reporting to the same entity, the federal government, on similar issues. And then, of course, you have, as you know, Nancy Molina from IMST was not able to make it today, but there are materials on the IMST in Chapter 11 available to you. And I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Byler?
Yes. Just to clarify, I'm seeing from on Chapter 8, I was talking about $106 million, but all of a sudden I'm seeing a figure of total revenues available, $138 million. There's revenue transfers to other agencies from major. I just was trying to keep all these figures.
Mr. Byler, if you'd like to respond, and I believe there's also some carryover in that.
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that's the whole revenue picture, the whole revenue picture, including funds that are moved to other agencies.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry to hear about our IMST person's ongoing flu or whatever it is, but I did have one question. Do you know how something gets on to the IMST review agenda. It talks about they review the agency assessments and reports. And what I'm thinking of particularly is we're having a debate in another committee I'm on about the forestry's plan revolving around the Tillamook forest, and there's a report, and it's been ballot measured one way, and now it's going another way. And I wonder if that's the kind of thing they would look at to say what the, you know, whether where we're at now is sufficient or not, and review the work done by the Department of Forestry. Is that what we mean by independent science review of agency assessment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clem, certainly can be, and it's a two-way street essentially with the IMST. Sometimes they'll ask for certain information because they will generate studies from within. But we're seeing more frequently that agencies will approach them asking for their review of work that we're doing. And a good example of that is took place recently and will continue to take place in the next biennium with the multi-agency efforts on recovery planning for endangered salmon and steelhead stocks.
Okay, thank you.
Anything additional?
Question of the chair.
Yes.
It concerned the IMST budget, which is 660-some thousand, I think, somewhere. It's not in the governor's recommended budget, or is it?
I thought that amount is.
It is.
It is.
Okay.
It was the pop that didn't get the additional
okay. enhancement.
Okay. One minor thing about the MST budget. There seems to be a fluctuation in the percentage of FTE for the people that are actually on the IMST. Can you explain that fluctuation? Is it budget-driven or is it workload-driven?
Well, Mr. Chair, I may not be the best person to respond to that, but I can certainly ask Nancy Molina to follow up with the committee on that with that information.
Chair, the IMST came to my policy committee and gave a presentation, and my understanding, and I don't know if you were there for that, but it's more workload driven because they, depending on the amount of studies they're reviewing, or you know what, so there it seemed like their workload fluctuated a little bit, based on the percentage of their time that they were reviewing these studies.
I think some of it has to do with how many federal people are participating too. I'm not sure they count towards that.
It just seemed interesting to me because as we went from biennium to biennium, they go from 0.2 to 0.25. So with that, I believe we are finished for today. I hope to be back to your budget before June 1st.
That's comforting, isn't it?
But with that, we are adjourned. Thank you all.